Hi, I'm Scott Clapson here on KCIW. You are listening to Perspectives in Healthcare. I'm here today with Nanami Godfrey. How are you, Nanami?
I'm very well, thank you.
It's great to have you back.
Thank you.
So for our listeners, do you want to share maybe who haven't heard this before what your title is and what you do?
So I am the Older Adult Behavioral Health Specialist, and I'm affiliated with the Older Adult Behavioral Health Initiative, which is a state initiative that was designed to help people in my role to define the gaps in healthcare that are happening for a lot of our seniors in communities. So there are, if I'm remembering correctly, I think there's 26 of us, including the coordinator of the project. Because our communities look very different, we all have a different things that we take back to the state. And it's an extremely important perspective to be able to speak back to the state in this manner.
And what are you speaking back to the state about?
Well, those gaps in services, like I said, there's a lot of our older folks who are struggling to not only make ends meet, but also to get the proper help that they need to navigate their daily lives. Those aren't necessarily being heard, especially from rural areas like Brookings, because I oversee Coos and Curry County. So our rural communities look very different. So having something to say back to the state that lets the state know that we are here, that we are not like Portland or Eugene or Salem, and that we deserve to be heard is absolutely an important part of this. Otherwise, we'll never get the services that we need to specifically address the needs that are happening here in this community.
Absolutely. And rural isn't really a catch-all term, right? I've noticed that here in Oregon, they use rural to kind of define everything that's not in the Eugene, Salem, Portland metro area. And when you get outside of that, we're not all the same, right?
Right. And that's kind of the reason. And when they created, there were legislators that came together and were very interested in defining those gaps in service and had the... They were smart enough to know that we needed to be given some leverage so that we could go out into the communities and know that we were going to be coming back with different information, and also that we needed to be given a little bit more latitude to be able to define the issues as was appropriate for each one of our communities, so that we're not fitting people into programs now. What we're doing is we're speaking back to the state to kind of create a wraparound. Like in therapy, we talk about wraparound services. Mm-hmm. If we're going to be effective in communities, we have to identify how communities are different, because we need to be providing wraparound services to meet those specific needs that are very unique to each one of our communities.
So I know what wraparound services are, and some of our listeners maybe are familiar with that, but would you explain a little bit more what that looks like?
So wraparound services is the idea that in order to meet the needs of a person, and that's, we use wraparound specifically when we're talking about delivering services to a person, usually mental health, and then there may be other issues involved. But wraparound is looking from the perspective of the person. It is a holistic perspective on some of the needs that they have that are not being met. And what it does is it defines what is needed from their perspective on the issues that are going to help them better navigate their lives. So, you know, depending on what their needs are, some of the issues that they're dealing with, you're going to have people at the table. A lot of times this takes the form of a multidisciplinary team that comes together. You might have a physician there for somebody with disabilities. Let's say they have mental health issues as well. You'll have a mental health practitioner there. You might have the school there if they have any cognitive issues. When you start talking about that and you're bringing in the different people that are going to help provide the services to make it so that this person gets what they need so that they're able to function at their highest capacity. And that's kind of the wraparound for a person. Now, when you talk about communities, obviously you're talking about a lot of people. And so what you have to do is you need to start to understand what communities look like as far as what are the gaps, what are the things that are happening that are common within the community that multiple people are experiencing. When you start, like when I created the community assessment, which is a tool that is being disseminated through the CHETCO Activity Center.
Also on KCIW, they can fill it out still, right?
Yes, I believe so. So the community assessment tool is a way for me as the older adult specialist to begin to show in Coos and Curry County how our communities are the same and how they are different. As we create that information, the things that are the same actually give us some leverage to start asking legislators for the services that are needed because they start affecting a large group of people. For those things that are different, it allows us to create dialogues both within community and also with service providers about those things that make those communities specific and start to address how we're going to meet those needs.
So filling out the community assessment is probably a good idea for our listeners that have not, correct?
I think so, because what that does is it allows everybody to get a chance to talk about some of the things that are affecting their lives as people who are living within Curry County. And I am actually letting other people know in Coos County that we're doing these podcasts. So hopefully even people in Coos County will be able to fill out a community assessment. The questions are all the same, but I guarantee you all the answers are going to be very different. And we'll be able to start showing how we are the same and how we are different. And then speaking back to people who are running, you know, the funding, they're the ones that make the decisions. We can start bringing data, quantitative, meaning numbers, and qualitative, as in how is it affecting the lives of the people that we're serving?
Absolutely. So if someone wants to fill out the community assessment, they could find it on KCIW. There's a link on our website. Or you could also stop by the CHETCO Activity Center at 550 CHETCO Lane. We're right behind Subway. Or by calling 541-469-6822. And we do have blank copies of the community assessment for people to fill out here. So absolutely, if you're listening, please fill that out. It will be helpful for us to know so we can help Nanami identify some of these gaps in services by filling out this community assessment. So we've talked about so far, we've been on a few podcasts together, right? So
yes,
we've talked about social isolation. We've talked about elder suicide and how to support people in those situations. The last podcast was about building healthy social networks. And we decided collaboratively that we would talk in this podcast about handling grief. And that can be a real challenge. And it can definitely, as we get older, that can sort of surmount, right? I was talking to one of the diners here at the Activity Center today about the grief support group that we're starting here. And she was saying that she's been volunteering here since 93. And all of the people that she's seen that have passed on in the time that she's been coming here since the early 90s. And it just impacted me, right? I mean, I feel like at 41 that I've lost people, but what happens when you know, all of your friends are dying? How do you cope with that? You know? And that's something that happens as we age, you know, we lose our support network sometimes to people passing. So how do we handle grief?
Well, I think there's so the first thing we have to do is acknowledge that there is a age difference in the way we handle grief. When we're younger and we have a lot of social support, we have our friends at school, we have our families, we're involved in activities outside the home many times. These are all provide opportunities to deal with life's ups and downs. So when we lose a pet when we're younger, oftentimes we can turn to someone and we can mourn. We can be given the process, the natural process, and I have to emphasize that very strongly, the natural process of grieving. And we can learn that grieving is a natural part of life. The problem is that as we age, those social support networks start to fray. So as we get older and we start to define ourselves in our career, a lot of our support comes from our workplace. Who we define ourselves as often is what we do, especially for men. So as we age and we come up on retirement, we lose that. We retire, but oftentimes because we don't talk about it, the kind of boomerang effect that happens is that oftentimes people are faced with the loss of identifying with who I am and my importance within the community, the way that I give back, how I have my self-esteem, who I am able to help. When that goes away, and our children, let's say, are at that age where they start moving out, we are left alone. When our significant other dies, we end up being very alone. And in those times, when we've lost so much, we also have to understand that those social support networks, your work, your employment situation where you've had people you could talk to on a regular basis, your family, you know, your close family, they're not there anymore. You know, maybe your neighbors have also died or they've moved away. These are all a series of losses that complicate grief for people who are aging. And it's what becomes problematic with that is the longer that people are not given the normal grief process, very often the more that it becomes more pathological in the sense that it takes on the air of depression. It can take on helplessness and hopelessness because what we were is now gone. Who we related to is gone. Now I've faced something and I'm turning and there's no one standing there to help me. So who do you reach out to? Now we talk about the CHECO Activity Center and we talk about reaching out. We talked about that in building healthy social support networks. And those are all very important because in the normal process of grieving, those social support networks help us process that loss. But because as we age, those are gone, we end up feeling alone and helpless. And very oftentimes with older folks, they're not necessarily as open to talk about their feelings. So older folks, by and large, are not necessarily the ones to seek out mental health services. They're not the ones to want to affiliate. Many times what they'll end up doing is they're going to go to their primary care physician and they're going to say that they feel, you know, they can't get out of bed. And they'll more likely talk to their primary care physician. What we've just done is we've taken a very normal process of grieving and we've turned it into a medical condition. And that is not necessarily by our choice, but it's by the cultural definition of what aging has become in our culture. So we've complicated it for our aging folks.
Because it's grieving is, like you said, is natural, right?
Right.
And there's a tendency I've noticed for people to sort of want to rush the grieving process or want to feel like there's something wrong with them for experiencing grief. And grief's different for everybody. And I think that's really important to remember, right? That it doesn't always, there's not like the stages or whatever, and you don't always just move directly through the stages. It happens differently to different people. So can you speak a little bit more to this turning it into a medical situation when it's actually something maybe different? Could you speak a little more to that?
Yeah, I think that as society has gotten faster and faster, you know, we always have an appointment, we have somewhere to go, we have something to do. What we've left behind is the emotional experience of life. And we've kind of separated that from what we consider the human experience. So while people have to grieve in order to be healthy, emotionally healthy, we've given less and less time for that process. So when you compound that with the aging process itself and what that means culturally in our society, what you've done is you've taken something that has already been complicated for everybody, because we tend to, it's about what we can do, what we're able to perform or how we're able to perform, what can we make, but it's not about the emotional experience of how our lives are progressing. How do we feel about it? And giving us the right to have the time to process how we feel about it and to make the needed adjustments in our lives so that we stay emotionally healthy and happy. So as we speed things up, that has been left to the sidelines. And as we age, we're not given the time, nor do we have the resources to do it.
Yeah, we keep moving faster and faster and faster, don't we?
Yes.
And we're not really given the time that we need to really experience things fully. That's a really good point. I'm Scott Clapson. We're here on KCIW. You are listening to Perspectives in Healthcare. We're here today with Nanami Godfrey from Coos Health and Wellness. She is the Older Adult Behavioral Health Specialist. We really appreciate you listening. And if you are inspired by these podcasts, we encourage you to donate to KCIW. We are a nonprofit and we gladly accept donations to help get us on the airwaves. So grief is something that's really close to my heart, you know, working here at the CHETCO Activity Center and all of the things that we've experienced here. And, you know, I think not a month goes by where we don't lose someone that we care about here. What can we do to help ourselves cope with that?
I think that a lot of times when we lose people or when we have faced something which is creating grief within us, a lot of times because of the way our culture has insisted that we deal with it, we're not given the time to do that. So we're told kind of just get over it. We're just supposed to forget about it. Unfortunately, what that does, you know, and I use this all the time when I'm doing therapy, the more hits that we take emotionally, it's kind of like taking a warm soda can. And you take that warm soda can, and every single time you face a loss, your soda can, which is warm, is now being shaken up. Okay? So, you know, you're able to kind of slough it off maybe one time. Then you take another hit. Maybe you lose a pet, and it's shaken up again. And then someone, let's say your neighbor, ends up, you know, with something tragic happening to them, you have another loss. Maybe you yourself have to go in for surgery, and maybe because of the complications of diabetes, you're actually mourning because you are having an amputation. And so maybe you're mourning the loss of the lower part of your leg. Each one of these things shakes up the soda can. And while we try to keep it shut, and we try to pretend that it's not affecting us, what's happening inside there is volatile. And it's not volatile. It doesn't have to be. I'm not talking about, you know, violence. I'm talking about that all of a sudden these overwhelming sensations burst forth. And maybe we start crying uncontrollably while we're watching TV of something that just kind of hits us. And all of a sudden the tears start pouring out. Well, your warm soda can doesn't have any more space. So the trigger, whatever it was, maybe it was a song. Maybe it was what they were talking about on a particular show. And it triggers, and it's allowing the pressure to come out of your soda can. And so the tears fall. And I've actually heard, and I'm sure you have as well, people talk about those times, I just don't know why I'm crying. It just comes out, and I just can't stay on top of it. I think I'm going to lose my mind. No, you're not going to lose your mind. Remember I talked about the pathologizing of this? We have to understand every time we stop the natural emotions from occurring when we face pain and loss, that we are actually setting up what we're experiencing when those tears come uncontrollably. And that is, when we have those come, we've been holding the can shut too long.
So we should feel it.
Yes.
Yeah, that's ironic, because today, when I was talking to the guest at the activity center that's been coming here for so long, we were talking about the grief group that we're starting here on the third Thursdays of the month at the CHETCO Activity Center. And she said, well, you can't hold on to it. She said, you got to let it go. And I politely smiled. But sometimes it's someone that's so close to you, you know, like when my dad died, it was so close to me. It's something we're coming up on the 3-year anniversary in July. And it's something I still think about every day. It's not something I can just put aside and let go of. Right.
And I think that, and this is my take on it. I think if I'm allowing the grieving process, it means that I'm not standing in judgment of it. Mm-hmm. Nobody gets to define the grieving process for anyone. It is a personal experience and it needs to be allowed without judgment. So when we sit there and we try to say, well, just let it go, that's like, just get over it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something, if we're being effective interpersonally with each other, we need to allow people the experience and we need to let them know, yes, you will cry. And sometimes you may feel like you're out of control or it is overtaking you. You need to know it's like riding a wave. And I use this metaphor. I use a lot of metaphors.
So metaphorically.
Metaphorically. So it's kind of like when you feel that you can feel yourself welling up, mm-hmm. and you know it's coming. It's like when you're, and I don't know if you've ever ridden a wave because I love to ride waves. So it's when you can feel that wave start to take you,
mm-hmm.
and you're being sucked up into the wave. Now you have a choice. You can fight the wave or you can let yourself go with the wave. If you are to fight the wave, that wave has more of an opportunity to take you out than if you just allow it to happen. And then you slowly go up to the very top of the wave and you find yourself coming down on the other side. The whole idea is to breathe through it and know that there is an end. And it may come in waves for a very long time. But again, it's about allowing that to happen. And also choosing to be around. And some of us, unfortunately, we're not lucky enough to have a group or people that we can be around that are going to allow that experience. You need to find yourself someone who's going to allow you to be in that place. If you want to be accepted as a human being, the best litmus test on how worthy somebody is to stand with you is, do they allow you to be you? And that's a good way of testing it. Can you be you? Can you experience the grief? Can you ride that wave and them stay right next to you, letting you know you're going to get through it?
I like that analogy, riding the wave. It's something that I've tried to learn to do with the grief with my father's death. It can be a challenge because it does. Sometimes it feels very like, oh no, what am I going to do? But yeah, just kind of holding on until the intensity of the feeling subsides. Yeah, right in the wave. That's a really good metaphor. So what are some other skills or coping mechanisms that you might suggest for people maybe that are dealing with that, especially if they're feeling like they don't have people in their life that are going to stand next to them?
So one of the things, there's several things you can do, and all of them have to do with being creative. You don't necessarily, let's say the tears are coming. There are several things you can do while that is happening for you. There may be music that is very, very soothing to you, or actually may help you cry more. Music therapy is an amazing tool to use when you're feeling vulnerable. So knowing what music does that for you and cluing into that music and letting your feeling go with the music and let the thoughts and the memories come with the music. What you can do a lot of times through music therapy is you can slowly change your mood. So with the music, you can ride the wave. And as you are starting to feel differently, you can change the music and use music which is in line with the feelings that you're feeling at that moment. So let's say you start and you're very, very sad. So what you're going to put on is you're going to put something on that is aligned with your feelings, something that necessarily will bring a tear to your eye. I was just listening to Eric Clapton, Tears in Heaven?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I just listened to that, and that makes me cry. Okay, that's an amazing, moving song. And so what I do is I clue into that. Now, let's say I get through it, and I notice it's ebbed a little bit. Then I may choose to put on something that makes me feel content. Or, I think content's a good way of putting it. But you change the mood as you change the music. And a lot of times, because you're allying it with what's going on inside you, you can actually start changing your mood along with it. So that may be a way to come out of it. Other things you can do. You can also journal. So you can write memories. As they flood you, you can write them. So it becomes ways that you can go back and you can also process it after the fact. But it becomes a way of you putting in words the things that are coming. I used to say to people who were really angry, I didn't care if they cursed for 3 pages. They just needed to get it out of them. So words become another way. Other people might like to paint, or you do something very artistic. So they start painting. And maybe when they start it, because they're very sad, you get very dark colors. Okay? And as they start and they're painting, it starts to get brighter. That's allowing you to express it as you're feeling it and ride that wave. Now, the other thing that needs to be talked about is there's a thing called EMDR. Now, EMDR is eye movement, desensitization, reprogramming, I believe. I don't know the exact acronym. But what it does is it you use your eye movement. And what you do is you watch, there's a thing that's put in front of people, and the light tracks from one side to the other. What that does, you have to take your eyes and you track with the light as you have these feelings going through you, okay? What that does is it equalizes the hemispheres of your brain. We know that neurobiologically, we do better and we process emotions better when both sides of the hemispheres are communicating effectively. You can do the same thing that you could pay a lot of money for with the EMDR treatment. If you go out, you walk, you ride a bicycle, you swim. Why? It's repetitive motions on both sides of the body that are mirroring each other. So it actually gets the two sides of the brain to be able to communicate effectively, and it starts to calm you.
That's why walking is such a good thing to do.
Amen.
Wow, sounds like a really great place to plug our Walk with Ease group at Azalea Park.
See that?
Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 10:30 in Azalea Park. We have a really great walking group through the Czech Co-Activity Center. It's actually made quite a difference in people's lives. And we thought really, because it's an arthritis foundation program, we thought for like physical fitness, right? And it's turned out we found so many other like mental health benefits
right.
for walking. And I just, you know, I love to walk, but just every time I find something out new like this, I just get more and more excited about walking. It's so great.
Well, it's there's a lot of things that we have made techniques for, like EMDR. I'm not a big advocate of EMDR. I've actually sat for EMDR as a post-traumatic stress survivor, and I found that just doing the things that I do normally, as in walking and I swim a lot, any of those things, allowing the thoughts to come as you're doing it, you don't want to stop them. One of the things that we talked about last time was mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
Being mindful about your emotional experience keeps you emotionally healthy. What we've done, though, is in our culture, we have, because we've pathologized grief, we don't give people the right to do that. So being mindful of where you are, giving yourself a process whether it's to go out for a walk, or you're going to paint, or you're going to write, maybe you're going to sing, or you're going to use music to calm you down. The point is that each one of us has to define a process that is soothing. And self-soothing is absolutely essential for those people who do not have, you know, somebody they can just turn to and say, you know, I'm just having a bad day. And maybe you can't be verbal with another person. One of these techniques, or all of them, may help you bridge the gap between when you experience something which has started the grieving process for you and being able to reach out to someone. Maybe they're not home. Maybe the person you can talk to is not home from work yet, and you don't have anybody else to turn to. Give yourselves the right. Give yourselves the chance to start to deal with your own needs by self-soothing, by finding ways of allowing yourself to experience it and soothing yourself. Maybe it is sitting in a bathtub of warm Epsom salts, which makes you feel grounded and can start to nurture yourself in this. Let the tears come. Don't stop that, but be with it. Be with it and take care of yourself.
I like the Epsom salt bath idea.
Well,
sounds very relaxing.
Doesn't hurt if you put a little essential oils in there too.
Yes. So from what I'm hearing from you, it takes a lot of sort of self-determination to engage, right? That like you have to be willing to feel it, right? And not shove it down. And not sort of put it aside in an unhealthy way, but rather actually let yourself feel it in a creative way and allow yourself to be present with the emotion and realize that there's nothing wrong with you. It's not a medical condition to be fixed. It's an actual real process that takes time. And for some of us, it may take time that's maybe longer than someone else that we know that might have known the same person.
And I think that the complicating part of that is we have to acknowledge there is a gender difference, I think, huge. A lot of men are not in touch with their emotions like women are. I mean, it is a cultural thing that we do to our men in the sense that we don't enable them to learn how to deal with their emotions early on. Mm-hmm. So when they get to be older and they're, you know, over 65 and they've had all these losses, we need to understand that them being able to get in touch with those emotions is going to be a more difficult process, which is why I brought up all those things that you can do. I recently suggested to someone, because of the loss of a family member to suicide, I suggested that they try getting some music, trying to do the music, seeing if they could introduce music and specifically music is more sad. It brings up sad feelings, and have the older man think about, you know, his brother in the context of what had happened, but also allowing the music to kind of build that mood within him so that the two may give him an outlet for starting to get in touch with that experience, with what it is to have that sorrow and grief, and to see if there was a natural process that could begin for him in the sense of allowing him to do that and to experience it in many different ways. And it may not be music that gets to him. I think that there is a concern sometimes for men when they don't have any feelings at all, when it's just a flat, and there's been this huge loss. And that may or may not be the case. We all handle grief differently. I think that it is something to pay attention to, and especially if it doesn't feel right for the individual. So if I have somebody who came to me as a psychotherapist and they said, you know, I've just lost a family member and I feel I can't cry. I don't know what's wrong with me. I think it becomes an exploration because there's something in them saying to remember the wraparound approach. Okay. So they're coming to me and they have enough self-knowledge to say, you know, I don't feel that this is right. And I feel like there should be something there. Something is making them say that. So it's about allowing them the chance to explore that feeling. Is that something that is something that we need to be trying to build, having them connect with the feeling of sadness? Or is it something that maybe they haven't connected with themselves? And exploring how to do that with that person. Because there is a cultural way that we do things differently, whether it be a man versus woman. Different cultures deal with grief differently. And that's something we have to be mindful of too. So we have to understand it from the person's perspective that is seeking the help. Because just because someone is not crying doesn't mean that they're not grieving or that they don't have a process to it. We just need to understand it from that perspective.
Absolutely. So for those of us that may know someone that's experiencing grief and is maybe having a hard time, what ways could we be of a support to them so we don't diminish, I guess is a really good word, their experience with the grief if maybe we're not having the same experience? How do we be a good supportive friend or family member to someone who is going through a hard time with grief?
I think it starts with the person that you're talking about. If the person that you're trying to support, you need to look to them for cues. It doesn't hurt for you to ask them. I would like to sit with you. Is it okay if I sit with you? Just being present sometimes is enough. You can ask them if they are of the if they're in the right frame of mind. They might be able to share with you what's bringing up the grief or what is making them grieve, and let them start to put that into words. For some people, emotions don't become real until they can speak them. So especially for women, women grieve. We have to say a lot of things. We say things, we process things with words, and then we have a better idea of how we feel about things. Now, allowing someone a chance to talk about their grief may actually help them get back in touch with how they're feeling. You can also listen to music with them. You can watch a movie. All these things become ways that we can get in touch with that experience, that feeling that is brought up within us. Then we can think about what we've lost and connect the two. And that allows them a way of connecting the grief with something. Maybe it was extraneous, like a movie that brings up the grief or the sadness, and then think about what they've lost. That may actually help them be able to get into the experience of grieving. But it again, they get to choose how to do this. We, if we're supporting them, we're mindful and we are actively listening to what they're asking from us.
So as we come to the end of the podcast, is there anything else that you feel like, any wisdom that you could impart to us on better ways to be present with ourselves or with other people while they're grieving?
I think what we have a really hard time with in this culture in general is allowing. We have to allow each other to be what we are. That means that we have to acknowledge the fact that we're all different. So everything we experience is going to be slightly different than each other. For us to go into any situation or any relationship and think we know the way to grieve properly or to do anything is to not be fair to the person that we're trying to help. We have to go with an open mind. And if we're helping, that means we step out of the way and we let who we're trying to help set the pace and how it evolves. Otherwise, we're not helping at all.
That's a really good point. Thank you, Nanami. I really appreciate you. This has been Perspectives in Healthcare. I am Scott Clapson here on KCIW. We've been here today with Nanami Godfrey from Coos Health and Wellness, and we've been talking about handling grief. We're doing a special series here in Perspectives in Healthcare with Nanami on different topics. So far, we have done social isolation, elder suicide, building healthy social networks, and this most recent podcast, Handling Grief. We thank you so much, Nanami. I look forward to sitting down with you again very soon and talking some more about our next topic that we come up with. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Curry Coast Community Radio, your community-supported radio station. If you like this program and want to hear more like it, consider becoming a founding member. For more information, go to our website, kciw.org.